Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
Back here on the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast, Chip Patterson here, Barton Simmons there. We are recapping Week 8, a wild week in college football. We are sitting here on Monday, October 23rd. We are 8 days from the release of the first college football playoff selection committee rankings. We had huge, colossal top 25 wins. Congratulations to Notre Dame and to Penn State, both in the high-profile games of the evening, showing out. A really incredible performance by both the Irish and the Nittany Lions. We'll get into that and much more. Today's theme, Barton, is where today's theme is who's peaked and where is rock bottom. It feels like a good time here as we're wrapping up October and going into November to kind of judge the trajectory, how things are going to go and play out over the next 5 weeks.
Yeah, there were some, I feel like a lot of the real critical games over the course of the weekend were either huge highs or big time lows for winners and losers. And the way teams bounce back from this, respond, is going to tell us a lot and shape, I think, the playoff picture, shape the coaching carousel. I think this weekend was, you know, maybe didn't, you know, kind of didn't shake up the order of things necessarily.
Oh,
but
no,
I think changed the way maybe we see some teams in a big way.
100%. Very little change in the like the polls and the top 25 rankings and the CBS Sports 130. Not a whole lot of shake up in any of those rankings. But there was a shakeup in the CBS Sports 130, very, very small. And so I want to go ahead and start here. Do you think, Barton, that after a 42-13 win against Michigan, and we're going to come to Michigan in a second, do you think that this is the peak for Penn State?
I went into this game expecting Penn State to win. I also expected it to be close. I went into this game expecting Penn State to then go to Columbus next week and lose in a close game. I'm trying not to have the recency bias and overreact to what I just saw. But that was really impressive.
Right.
And the stadium, it was an atmosphere that you are not going to top anywhere in college football. But man, I really like Joe Moorhead. I really like Brent Pry. James Franklin is as good of a CEO as there is out there. I'm starting to think, Chip, that they go into Columbus and win next
week. Wow. Well, we're recording this Monday morning. I know, Barton, you will take some time in your meditation chamber.
Yes, this is not a formal official pick, but it's hard for me to say this is as good as it's going to get for Penn State, because they just seem like they've got a lot of the ingredients to keep this thing rolling. As I was watching the game, you know, the question was going to be, could they score on Michigan? Because I think it was pretty safe to say Michigan wasn't going to put up a lot of points on Penn State. That's not been Michigan all year. But could they score on Michigan? And the reason I think they can and did is they've got the things that you need to score against a big-time defense. You can throw jump balls to take advantage of like 50-50 situations. And they have these big receivers on the outside. Mike Gesicki at tight end. Trace McSorley throws a nice ball out there. They've got a quarterback that can extend and escape. And they've got a difference maker that can just out-athlete everyone on the field and get a big play. And all those things happened. And those are things that will translate, I think, to Ohio State. So I'm not ready to pick that win, but it's hard for me to say this is going to be as good as it gets for Penn State this year. I think they've got some really good moments coming ahead, and I mean, that really boils down to next weekend. Where are you at with it?
I'm
I think that this is as good as it's going to get. I got to stick to this because you're right. There's some recency bias here.
I think that's the smart play. I think that's like the brains play.
Like we spent a lot of time across our many the loyal listeners of the show might think we hate Penn State because I feel like we've been poking holes in Penn State for like 4 weeks now, and so. In that sense, then it is the don't get wide eyed by that win. That was incredible. Like, can we talk about the flip flop, the zone read where Saquon Barkley's the quarterback and Trace McSorley is the running back?
Yeah, like, that's nifty.
Like you've got Saquon Barkley getting moved all around in the offense. He ends up finishing with a touchdown catch and a couple big receptions, three total touchdowns. Like that, as I felt like people kept throwing Barkley Heisman talk at me, you know, just in different radio hits, different video hits from throughout the last couple days going into this game, and I think that's my new argument for Barkley is that Bryce Love is getting like. Ridiculous amounts of yards, 1,300 yards so far this season on the ground. But Barkley's getting it done receiving, rushing, and kick returners. And Heisman voters love versatility like that. Like I don't think he's tied to Penn State. I don't think he's a best player, best team scenario. But the way that he was getting moved around against Michigan, the different wrinkles that Joe Moorhead put into that offense for that big game, it felt like that was the best performance that we're going to see from Penn State this year. Everything about it was huge.
It was, yeah. Well, in that sense, yes. Like that probably is the best all-around performance we see from Penn State. But I guess if they can still beat Ohio State, that
could be a peak performance, and they could still win against Ohio State.
It just might not look quite as pretty.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah, I think that is as good a win as we are going to see in Penn State's regular season. You know, we obviously have seen from the Rose Bowl last year and from the Big Ten Championship game, they're capable of going into these huge, colossal postseason contests and playing an instant classic. But in terms of regular season, with the next two games being at Ohio State, at Michigan State, I think that was peak. That was peak Penn State.
Can I just I had a chance to visit Penn State in spring this past spring, and I had a chance to sit down with Brent Pry, sit down with Moorhead, sit down with Franklin. And one of the things that really struck me about Joe Moorhead was he's like, you can see it on the sideline. They give a lot of sideline shots of him, and he's very calm, almost easygoing. And there's like a really sort of sly confidence in Joe Moorhead. And one of the things I really like when I talked to him, I was like, look, how do you handle these expectations? You know, and now all of a sudden people are expecting Penn State to be really good on offense and you got everyone coming back, Saquon Barkley, all this stuff. And James Franklin's answer to that is like, oh, we're all about ourselves, you know, focus on, you know, one day at a time, that kind of coach speak. And Moorhead's just sort of like, hey, I'm glad there's expectations. We want expectations. This is Penn State. Like I want a target on our back. And it's just that kind of confidence is, I think, so pervasive, and I think it's so contagious. And I think they're this sort of complete performance, I think, isn't the type of performance that then like they can't compound. I think there's a type of performance that they can channel and continue to believe in and continue to improve from. And so I'm leaning towards that they got more, that the best is yet to come. I just am such a believer in the coaching staff, and I think they're going to have these guys ready. I mean, Urban Meyer's staff's no slouch, but that's going to be a heck of a game next week.
All right, well, let's flip it on the other side. Rock bottom discussion, the Michigan Wolverines. Hard to say rock bottom about a team that only has two losses, but I guess if you're a Michigan fan, like we said, you hope this is rock bottom. Where do you think things go from here for the Wolverines?
I guess this is probably not rock bottom for me. I think they're 5-2. I think that this is going to be a 8-4 regular season. I think they lose to Wisconsin and Ohio State. Do you disagree with that?
I don't disagree with that. I feel like I'm reflexively, like my reflection action to the fallout for Michigan within the Michigan fan base and sort of the Michigan camp. I feel like I have to cape up for Jim Harbaugh. Why do I have to cape up for Jim Harbaugh? Like, why are we putting the whole Michigan program? Why are we all putting them to trial right now after this loss?
Yeah, all this Jim Harbaugh's Brady hoax stuff is nonsense.
Yeah. Okay. That's where I'm like, no. Like, you're right. I don't think that Michigan's going to beat Ohio State. And if they lose at Wisconsin, especially with that game being in Madison, it shouldn't be that surprising. And an 8-4 record might, like, in the standings definitely look tough to swallow, particularly when you start to bring out the, yeah, but how they play against the best teams. And I can't help but go back to the idea that looking at this football team, the way it's made up and expecting a Big Ten championship is unrealistic. It is an incomplete football team.
This is a team, if they're in the, you know, SEC East, then they got a chance to win that division. If they're in the
This is very Florida. It's got a real Florida look to it.
If they're in the Big 12 even, I think they've got a chance to win that conference just by being in every game. I know the Michigan State loss sort of belies this theory, but, like, you know, look, Penn State, Ohio State, and probably, like, I watched some of that Wisconsin game this weekend, and I think they're really good. Those are three teams that are they're three top five teams in college football. And so this version of Michigan just can't be expected to beat those teams this year. Now, we did kind of expect them to play with them, and now we know who this Michigan team is, and that's not who they are. This isn't the year for that. Next year might be the year for that, but this is not the year for that. And so in that sense, I think Michigan still got some good football left to play, but I do think they finished the season on a 2-game losing streak.
Mm. Yeah. And which, of course, you know, in terms of a Michigan fan, that would feel like rock bottom.
That would be the rock bottom.
Yeah.
And then, golly, that's going to be obnoxious listening to Michigan fans talk about how horrible their coaching staff is.
When it is
literally the best coaching staff in college football. Like, and they're going to complain and talk about how terrible they are. Just save it.
Don Brown and Pep Hamilton are titans in the industry. The hell are you talking about? I'm not looking forward to that, but absolutely could see that. All right, I'll let you take, where do you want to take this? I know we've got a couple teams we discussed for both peaks and rock bottoms.
Let's go to another rock bottom. Let's go to the car wrecks. How about rock bottom for Tennessee? Are we at rock bottom yet? It's been a deep dive. Let's see how far this oxygen tank will take us. Have we hit the depths?
No way. What's it? What's the Jules Verne book? 10,000 leagues, 20,000 leagues under the sea. Yeah, we're gonna reach Jules Verne a little bit later, because I'm gonna stick to my guns here. I think that Butch Jones, I feel like it's already been decided that A, they will be moving on from Butch Jones, and I think it's already been decided that B, he will coach the rest of the regular season. And for that reason, I'm going to say that rock bottom will probably be a home loss to Southern Miss. Maybe home loss to Vandy at the end of the season too. Maybe home loss to Vandy.
That would be rock bottom.
Yeah.
That would absolutely be rock bottom. And they could lose to Southern Miss. Like, Southern Miss
is good.
Good team.
Yeah, that's a good football team.
And now LSU looks good again. Like, so much for that pipe dream that they're going to beat LSU. They're underdogs this week to Kentucky. At Kentucky. At Kroger. At night.
That game is going to be what, 15-9, just like the South Carolina game?
Oh, that's going to be a disgusting.
That's
disgusting
not. Game. Don't. No, rock bottom is sitting through all of Tennessee, Kentucky.
Oh, that's going to be so gross. That's going to be one of those games where it's played just between the 40s. Mm-hmm. You know, they just can't – just no one can get beyond their own 40-yard line. And it's just going to be – so, yeah, I'm with you. I think this Tennessee team is what did they say? They got five games left. I said before if they could win out, Butch keeps his job and they'd be 8-4. I don't think they can win out, though. I think they go. What's your prediction for their closing record?
So they are 3-4 right now. I'm not putting it past them to be able to go on the road and get a win at Kentucky, but over the next five games, I think there are definitely three and probably four losses. And so we're either talking about 5-7 or 4-8.
Wow, four losses. I think they beat Vanderbilt. I think they find a way to beat Southern Miss. I kind of think Missouri's scary because Missouri can put up points.
Yes, dude, you know, especially for the last road trip of the season. Yeah, no, so I all advantage to Missouri in that game.
So I'm gonna put them at. I'm gonna put them at 6-6.
Dude, there's no way they even want 6-6.
No.
That's lame ducking into the what? What would you be go? What's the what's one of the low SEC games? Do you go to Shreveport for that?
That's like a turn down bowl invite type.
Yeah. No.
That's like a thanks, man. We'll stick around. We'll stay at home.
What's our APR score? I really don't want to get in at 5-7. Let's make sure that we don't get one of these APR 5-7 bits. Yeah. I don't know. So I think rock bottom is still coming. I don't.
Yeah.
The same schedule that we looked at and said, hey, you know, for all the negativity, and I think that was going into South Carolina. Like we were coming out of Georgia and the bye week, and we were like, here we go. You know what? They could beat South Carolina, Kentucky, Southern Miss, Missouri, LSU's not looking good. Like all of a sudden, they could spin this around. I don't see it.
If they had scored 10 offensive points, like an offensive touchdown and a field goal off a 60-yard drive or something, I would have some faith that this team could, you know, has some resiliency to it. But they didn't. Their only score was basically like kept it from being. If not for the pick six, it would have been 42-0 or 52-0 as opposed to 45-7. So this team is still, I mean, it's inept on offense. It's just totally inept. And so I can't have any faith that they can run the table.
I kind of like Jarrett Guarantano's performance in general. I thought that
he just doesn't have a chance. He had no shot. Yeah. You know?
He gives.
And why can't, and I don't understand why they still can't figure out a way to allow John Kelly to be great. And they got Ty Chandler's a good back too. Like there's something off about this offense. And it doesn't help that they have no receivers that are making any plays. And I think Guarantano is okay, but not a savior. But man, it's just something missing.
All right. Let's keep it in the SEC, but let's flip it to Peaks. After three straight SEC wins, do you believe that this is the peak for LSU?
No, the reason I think this isn't the peak is because we saw Darius Geis showed up again.
Oh, he's as healthy as he's been all season, it looks like.
Like the old Darius Geis showed up. It was just the way he was running the football was just, it was just a different juice to him, different pace, different guy. And so that's huge. And I think this is all from all along. Like I never, when they were struggling against Mississippi State, when they lost to Troy, when, you know, they eked it out against Florida, like I did never doubt Matt Canada's offense. I've been really bullish on him throughout. And now they had a great second half against Auburn, 40 points against Ole Miss, which is not anything too impressive given Ole Miss's defense, but they're getting this offense figured out. And I don't think they're going to beat Alabama, and it may not even be close. But I think they're going to take care of business the rest of the way, beat Arkansas, beat Tennessee, beat Texas A&M, and I think they're going to look much more like the old LSU doing it, because the young guys on defense have gotten their feet wet. They're settled in. Their offense is figuring it out. They're starting to click. And I think they finish 9-3.
9-3 with a 6-2 SEC record, second place in the division behind Alabama, is a strong first season of full-time Ed Orgeron.
Now the question is, second in the division, what does Mississippi State finish? Because I guess Mississippi State would have to beat Alabama to be ahead of LSU in the division. So that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
So looks like they will be, if they go 9-3, they would be in second of the division. And that's a little backish if you're having that kind of a close to the season.
Yeah. And that probably means that you're a top 15 team, right?
Yeah.
The Miles Brennan era begins. Like, we finally move on from Danny Etling, not by choice, but by circumstance. And yeah. and we move forward. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Thanks.
I think that this is fun, and maybe it is something tied to my age. I don't have 50 years of watching the SEC under my belt so that I can like have all the ups and downs and the sways, but you know, for a lot of my existence of being, you know, super plugged into college football and working college football, I like it when LSU's good, you know? So I'm cool with this as a fan.
Yes, I do not. I want no part of LSU being bad.
It's not fun.
No, it is not fun. I want LSU to be really good, and I want Alabama LSU to mean something, and I want the Death Valley to be electric. And I think we got a chance to get that back.
Do you want to take us anywhere?
Yes. Let's see. Where do I want to go? Now, how about, are we at rock bottom at, no, how about this one? Are we at peak Lane Kiffin at FAU?
you threw that down. I never in my wildest dreams imagined that we'd be getting into some peak FAU, but they are beating the pants off of teams right now. Do you know they've scored more in their last 2 weeks than Florida State has all season?
Yeah, I believe that.
Florida Atlantic has more points in its 69-31 win over North Texas and its 58-28 win over Old Dominion than Florida State has in the entire season. This is incredible.
I mean, 804 yards of offense. Is that is that the number I saw? Lane Kiffin is sort of a clown, and I think he sort of knows it and he owns it. And in that sense, you can sort of excuse it a little bit because the guy kind of knows who he is. But he can coach the ball. I mean, that guy can coach some ball, and he's got a renegade staff, but it's a renegade staff that can coach some ball. And so this is going to be, Chip, like, what's going to, like, is he going to be back in the Power Five discussion here again soon?
Well, here's the way this plays out. I don't think that we're at peak Lane Kiffin because, he is going to end up continuing to do this all the way to maybe playing in the Conference USA championship game on Championship Saturday.
Let's just say he wins out.
Dude, they get Marshall. They get Marshall at home. That's going to be the game that decides that division. They get, all right, they're Western Kentucky on the road this week. Marshall at home on a Friday night. So it's the November 3rd. And so if they're able to get wins in the next 2 weeks, riding this white hot offensive streak. I mean, dude, they scored on their first 11 possessions.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. So they get the wins in the next 2 weeks. They might lock up a spot in the Conference USA championship game.
Their only loss was a respectable loss to Wisconsin and a bad loss to Navy in his first game. They lost to Buffalo, which isn't a bad team either. But all non-conference, if they get on a 8-game win streak, I mean, the fever pitch for Lane Kiffin, you might even be able to convince some Tennessee fans to let him back in Knoxville.
No way. is this peak Lane Kiffin? No, because this thing can get even wilder real quick.
Oh man, this is so entertaining. The guy is great for entertainment purposes, and this is another one I am ready to embrace.
What's the and it's so wild too. All right, so the Renegade staff. What's the offensive staff? We got Kendall Briles as OC, right?
Kendall Briles is the OC. Yeah, I think Art Briles is down there somewhere, just maybe not coaching him up, but he's on the phone with Kendall on a regular basis. They got Chris Kiffin, the DC, who is probably got a show clause waiting for him as soon as this Ole Miss investigation finishes up. They've got a off-field guy that's had a show clause before. It's just the whole group is there's some they're imperfect human beings, but they're all good coaches.
Do you think that he would make a jump right after this season?
I mean,
definitely.
I certainly wouldn't put it past him. Yeah. If it was the right job. Like, he's not going to have loyalty to FAU. To me, it would take a very unique situation to offer for him to get offered that job this quickly, I think.
UCLA?
Like, I don't know. Like, I don't see that would be pretty ballsy of UCLA.
That would be so ballsy of UCLA.
Maybe if they take their swing at Chip Kelly and a couple others, and then they fall back to Lane, then there it is. But man, this is good TV though, man. This is good TV watching this play out.
All right, I got one for you. Let's get it. Let's go peek. Do you think that after just running the ball right at and through a hobbled USC defensive front, that we are at peak Notre Dame right now?
I worry that we are.
That this is gonna like schedule across the next five games ends up breaking them down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean they've, you know, I think. Look, the Boston College win is looking better than we anticipated.
Offensive juggernaut, Boston College.
Yeah, right. Yeah. How about that? Michigan State looking better than we anticipated. So, and then they're at Georgia. So it's not like they played a bunch of cupcakes in their early season schedule. But it gets pretty brutal here. And I think that game can, as impressive as it was, look, we talked about it a lot. Like, USC was very hobbled heading into this game. We learned that Sam Darnold was even hobbled with a bad ankle, and they pulled him in the second half due to that ankle, just to not no reason to risk it anymore because they were getting blown out. So I worry that 49-14 win is not going to hold up in terms of the way they are as a dominating team. I still think that they're capable of winning out. But look, NC State's going to be a war. Miami is going to be a war. Stanford, those two are on the road. That's going to be an absolute battle. And then you got Wake and Navy in between all those that are both teams that can beat you. I don't think this is a team that finishes 5-0 in that stretch.
I agree. Too tough.
I'd love to see it. Hey, that's another team. It's I don't know. I'm not always on board with Notre Dame being good. There's some times when I'm okay with them being down a little bit. But something about the staff I like. Something about this team, especially on defense and especially on that offensive line, I like. So I'm kind of rooting for them to go 5-0. I'd love to see this team in the playoffs. But man, that's a tall ask. NC State is going to be. I mean, that team is no joke.
That is that's going to be a game where Brandon Wimbush is going to have to get it done. I think NC State's defensive front is going to be able to do a much better job of getting penetration and forcing Wimbush to get out there and make a play. I think that there's going to be some third and longs that are very, very scary when it's Wimbush against Chubb, and I don't know who wins that battle.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, they got a little help in the receiving game. You know, Kevin Stefferson stepped up, made some plays, but it's still fairly one-sided offense. Like, there's still Josh Adams is still out here just like quietly running for like nearly 200 yards, you know, just about every time out. So, you know, it worries me against a team like NC State that has the defensive line to hold up. So that's going to be fascinating.
You know, what makes me a little bit sad that I felt like this passing attack just doesn't have the vertical down the field wrinkles that we saw last year that let Equanimeous St. Brown sort of explode onto the scene.
He's been one of the more disappointing players in the country, and not that he has been disappointing, because I think he's just done what's been asked of him. But they haven't. You're right. I mean, they haven't really taken the top out of off the defense. Chase Claypool, big body guy on the outside that should be able to provide some vertical threat. You know, they got those tight ends that are good players. So yeah, it's perplexing to me a little bit that Notre Dame hasn't been more effective in the throw game. But I guess, hey, when you got that run game, what are you complaining about?
Like, yeah, what? Exactly. Like, let's just go. We're just gonna run power behind McClinchy and Quentin Nelson. Have fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hey.
Stop it. Stop it. We'll throw when you make us. Let's go.
Yeah.
Like that. No, I'm with you. Like, this particular Notre Dame team, the fact, like, having a team that is dominant, I mean, and it's another reason why I like Georgia, having a team that is going to have a stout defensive front and just pound the rock on offense, like, that is very much on brand for my tastes. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, seeing,
yeah, it's easy to root for the offensive line, because those guys are just old school, just back alley brawlers, and they this Notre Dame team, like, it in the years when, like, I'm not as big of a Notre Dame guy, is when it feels like they're just, it's a little bit I don't know, like, I feel like they can have like a country club vibe to them.
Mm-hmm.
And this team feels gritty. This team feels like it has toughness to them, and I like that.
Well, if you're looking for peak opportunity to get value when you're looking for tickets to sports and concerts, well, then, of course, that means you're probably using SeatGeek. That's right, because the SeatGeek has a seamless mobile experience. You can download the app, and you can not only buy, but you could also sell tickets through the SeatGeek app. SeatGeek is designed to make the ticket buying experience easier than ever by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats to fit your budget. And 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast listeners get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. You just got to download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code 24/7 today. So if you want to be able to have these fully guaranteed purchases, so you're out there on SeatGeek, you're shopping with confidence, you don't have to worry about getting scammed over by a ticket vendor, this is the way you do it. You go to the SeatGeek app, download it, enter promo code 24/7 today. That's promo code 24/7 for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All right, Barton, you want to go peak or rock bottom?
Let's go rock bottom. Is Florida,
yes,
State.
Yeah.
Rock bottom. You go.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. This is rock bottom. This has got to be rock
this
bottom.
Is rock bottom? Is it? Is it?
This has got to be.
Are
rock
they
going
to? Are they going to go up and get excited about playing at Boston College next weekend at 7 o'clock at night?
This has got to be rock bottom.
You know what's going to be rock bottom for this team?
Florida?
is that Florida game.
Yeah.
Because that game is going to be ugly, and it's going to be just like that UCLA Texas A&M game, where like in a different way, in an uglier, less exciting way, where both teams leave the game not feeling very good about themselves.
Yeah,
you know, like there's no winners in that game. Yeah, that was. I'm really disappointed in myself for picking them in our locks podcast. Why I felt like I could trust this team is beyond me. Like, there's nothing to trust here. Like, this team is still talented and they can still blow someone out, I'm sure. But what reason have they given us to trust them? And man, it's getting a little bit.
It's getting touchy. Ugly. It's getting real like, ugly.
Jimbo's getting into it with the fans walking out of the stadium. It's, you know, brown paper bag time. Like, it's there's some bad storylines right now.
This has got to be rock bottom. This has got to be rock bottom. The only way it gets worse, unfortunately, it's an opportunity. It's an incredible opportunity for our boy Dino. A loss to Syracuse at home in the final home conference game of the season the week before Clemson would be rock bottom.
You know what's crazy?
What?
Is that who would have thought that Louisiana Monroe game getting canceled may be the difference in Florida State getting to a bowl or not?
I'm sitting here running the math because rock bottom is missing the postseason after coming in with national title hopes.
Yeah.
That's not just a DeAndre Francois injury changed everything. That's like the something was not as stable. Like, someone forgot to put the screws in the fair ride, like, in the right place. Like,
right.
Like, we didn't realize that when they were assembling this thing, that something wasn't done right, because it is way more rickety than a national title contender should ever look.
Yeah, it's and one thing I've noticed is where are the big plays from the wide receiver position? Like, I think James Blackman has been, I mean, he's had his fair share of turnovers that we could do without, but I was looking, and I may write something on it that this week, but I was looking after the game, like, you know, there's only 21 teams that have fewer 20-yard pass plays than Florida State. And among those, like, seven of those teams are option offense.
Yeah, seven of them just choose from the get-go not to run that.
And then there's, like, among, like, the others, their average win total is, like, you know, probably 1.5. Like, these are bad, bad, bad teams. I feel like, yeah, I know part of it is the offensive line protecting and giving the quarterback an opportunity, but like, where are these South Florida skill freaks that are supposed to take a screen pass and take it 47 yards? Like, where's the guy that's, I mean, Auden Tate's been pretty good, but he's not explosive. He's just a big body chain mover. So there's a lot, like, as the deeper we get into this, the, you know, the more warts are being exposed by Florida State. And yet, I think at the end of this season, we're going to look back and every game is going to be close. And it's going to be just like Notre Dame last year, where they went 4-8 and every game they lost was like a one score game. And Florida State is going to look back into this year and it may be 6-6. But every game they lose is going to be a one-score game. The difference is Brian Kelly went out and basically made wholesale changes to his coaching staff. And
Will Jimbo.
I don't really foresee Jimbo having that kind of approach. So this is going to be really interesting to see how he handles this at the end of the year. Regardless, they could win out, and I think there's still some serious questions that need to be answered.
Do you think this is rock bottom for North Carolina?
Oh God, this is a rock, just a season of rock bottom.
Oh no, it's going to get worse. That's the answer.
I gotta see the schedule before I make that call. I mean, I know that I don't have much confidence in them beating anybody. They're 1-7. Wow. They're not beating Miami. They're not beating NC State, and they probably aren't beating Pitt. This is going to be a 2-win season.
Yeah.
Losing at Pitt will be rock bottom because that's their last chance at a meaningful win. What does Larry Fedora go from here? Like, what does this tarnish his name? Did he wait too long to get out of Chapel Hill?
It hurts his over. I mean, it hurts him on paper. You know, just like the fact that everyone, you know, whenever you're talking about the coaching searches, everyone from message board to probably ADs, just pull up your Wikipedia page and look at your overall record at the school and your conference record at the school. And those numbers are definitely going to be hurt. And in that sense, maybe so. I think that the context is important, and the context is that every team has a floor and a ceiling, and coming into the year, even a fully healthy North Carolina team, the ceiling is the roof. Even a fully healthy Carolina team was looking at maybe a 6 or 7 win season. Then you take into consideration that they've lost 19 players for the year, and going into the Virginia Tech game, they add 6 other players out for the game. And so I was looking at the injury report. You had 24 or 25 players out, and 9 or 10 of them were starters at some point during the season. And wow. So, like, you look at it, and with context, you're like, wow, you know, this was already going to be a little bit of a step back rebuilding year, and then the players that were supposed to lead the way in the rebuilding got knocked out. So they are not fielding a competitive team at a Power 5 level.
No, I didn't even realize that it was that bad. I knew that they had some issues, but that's pretty brutal. You know, this year, like, I feel like Larry Fedora is the type of climber that's always looking for a better gig. And this year, there's going to be some jobs coming open, and he's just ruled himself out with this record. Like, he cannot be considered this year, and he needs a hell of a bounce back to be considered anywhere next year. And so do you think North Carolina fans then are pretty realistic about what this season has been, and like
100%
that fan base doesn't seem like they're like jumping off a cliff right now.
No,
they seem like they've just resigned to this. Is that they were dealt a bad hand.
Yeah. And this is coming from outside, like the noise about Fedora has almost all been from people outside who are looking in and be like, oh, you only got 8 wins with Mitch Trubisky? Oh, you went 2-10? Like, you got to move on from him. I think that like my parents are season ticket holders, and I was talking to my dad about it last night, and he was like, I mean, it's just they look like a high school team out there. Like, they just, yeah. they're not the players that are going to be able to be competitive. You know, the like being right there and having a bunch of bad mistakes blow, you know, the Cal game. And there's been lots of frustrations along the way. But I think for North Carolina fans, and also never forget, the North Carolina fan expectation is unfairly, but is directly linked to basketball success. So coming off the championship, it's a lot easier to swallow, like, oh man, that stinks. But hey, remember that title?
Yeah. I've got another FSU for you.
Ooh.
Is Fresno State.
Oh, Fresno State. What a win.
I've got Fresno State ranked above Florida State in my CBS 130 rankings.
So does that mean that Florida State's not in your top 50?
Florida State's not in my top 50. Got to beat somebody.
Yeah.
Got to win a game. Can't go 2-4 with me in my top 50. I'm sorry.
That's fair.
And Fresno State just killed San Diego State. They killed them 27-3. Their only losses are to Alabama and Washington. And those are weeks 2 and 3. So you know they're getting better. Jeff Tedford has put together a staff full of a bunch of CFL coaches. And he's out here, I mean, doing work. Like,
they're going to play for the Mountain West title because they've already got wins against San Diego State and Nevada.
This is a, yeah, this is, this team is, I think, pretty good. On that level, on that group of five level, I think they're pretty good.
So do you think that they will, as they continue to put together wins, because that side of the Mountain West, in my opinion, is the easier side. That is your Big Ten West. That is your SEC East. That is your Pac-12 South. I think the Mountain West West is that side of the division in the Mountain West. Will they be able to sneak up into Group of Five consideration? Because that's the ultimately, isn't that the lens that from a national perspective we view some of these like hot Group of Five teams, particularly in the Mountain West and the American?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think so. Look at the rest of their schedule. They've got UNLV, BYU, Hawaii, Wyoming, Boise State. Like, there's some pretty good games in there. Like, UNLV's not terrible. Wyoming's got Josh Allen and Boise State. I don't know. They could win out.
And, they could.
And then if they win out, I mean, that's a – I feel like if you win out with that schedule, like, you're probably sniffing top 25. And, like, I don't know, man. That's there's a lot to be excited about in Fresno right now.
So are you asking, is this peak Fresno? No, this can get much better. this can absolutely get much better.
This is like, what would like, if Phil Fulmer had taken a job at like, what would be a comparable, maybe like South Alabama or something. Is this what Phil Fulmer's South Alabama would have looked like? Because that's what happened. Like, Jeff Tedford was at Cal, and people took him for granted, and they said, you know, this is stagnated. This has gotten stale. It's time to move on. And they couldn't find any sustained success without him. And now they are at the bottom of the Pac-12. And now Jeff Tepfer has sort of proven everybody that he's the dude knows how to coach. And that's sort of the same thing that happened with Fulmer, only he didn't try to take another job. You know, This is a little bit of he's a prideful guy, I'm sure. It's kind of fun to watch him get out there and show people what's up.
Do you think that at 3-1 in conference play, sitting second place in the standings, that this is the peak for Iowa State?
This is the peak.
This is the peak.
It's
about to get so real. It's about to get very, very hard over the next 3 weeks.
It's a great story. And Iowa State's Matt Campbell, I'm on board with him being one of the best coaches out there, best young coaches in college football. But when did we start acting like Texas Tech was some juggernaut? Like, they were in the top 25 last week after a loss. Or was it 2 weeks ago? Like, you know, they lost to Oklahoma State, and then they got put into the top 25. Crushed Kansas. Lost to West Virginia. Like, Texas Tech is still Texas Tech, and Iowa State is a good team, and they should have a win over Iowa. They should only have one loss this year, but they got David Montgomery is one of the best backs no one's talking about. They got their walk-on quarterback in there playing great, all that stuff. I get it, but they're not going to be TCU. They're not going to be West Virginia. They're not going to be Oklahoma State. So
when did we start acting like Texas Tech was some kind of juggernaut? That was feeling. Hit me with that. Yes. That sustains me. I mean, I'm with you.
Get me going on Texas Tech. Yeah.
They're ranked for the first time since whenever. Iowa State, 5-2. Like, I think that they will be able to find one win to be able to become bowl eligible, but a top 25 team is not going to be sweating out road games at Baylor and Kansas State trying to make the postseason.
Yeah. This is a great feel-good story, and everybody in Ames, enjoy it, because this is not going to last.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right. I got another rock bottom. Where do you want to go?
You go for it. Go rock bottom. What you got?
BYU. Go Pirates! Yeah!
This is one that I do. I am not enjoying this BYU situation. Their only win is against Portland State, a team that they did not dominate by any stretch.
Wasn't that game like 20-6?
20-6. Oh. I watched that game. I thought BYU was just keeping it vanilla, and that's just who BYU is. This is sad, man. The BYU's Vegas over-under was 8.5. Like, this is a team that's supposed to be pushing 9-10 wins. Kalani Sitake, by all accounts, is a great dude. You got to go, man.
Wow.
You got to go. This is not cutting it.
Can BYU do that?
Probably not. They probably give him another year. But this is – there's no excuse for them to be this bad. There just isn't. They just shouldn't be this bad. And
I think Jamal Williams masked a lot last year for this team.
Jamal Williams was the real deal. I'll give you that.
I think that, like, having that really strong, capable, and that, like, you know, now we know, like, NFL caliber running back really changed the offense's ability to complement a stout defense.
Well, you know, remember now, Tanner Mangum played as a post-missionary freshman 2 years ago, and with Tanner Mangum out.
Taysom Hill out. Tanner Mangum
Tanner Mangum was in for Taysom Hill was out and was pretty good. And they won a lot of games with them. This is like Tanner Mangum should be capable, and it's just not. It's just there's just nothing there on offense. And their running backs are pretty high schoolish, but still, man, it's not supposed to be this ugly.
It's not supposed to be losing at ECU.
Yeah, yeah, and they've got a lot of winnable games left. San Jose State, Hawaii. You would think UMass, but UMass, in the battle of winless, just put it on Georgia Southern. Peak or rock bottom for Georgia Southern?
Yeah, the rock bottom has already gotten coaching change rolling. Yeah. Georgia Southern.
Yeah, that one was coming. That's another one. Talk about teams I want to see. Like, it's just, I think I tweeted this. Like, it's just comforting to see Georgia Southern rolling up on CUSA teams or whatever in the box score. Like, I don't have to watch the game, but just to know they're out there running that triple option and just scoring 45 is you know, makes my heart warm. And that's not happening. I want to get back to those days.
So what do we think? Like, go hire a Navy assistant?
Yeah, there's a bunch of names I'm not really familiar with that are getting thrown out for that job.
I'm just not plugged into the coaching search of when the opening is at Georgia Southern, and that's okay. Like, I can only have but so much of a, you know, I need to rely on other sources for that information. That's just not off the top of my head. I'm not plugged in on that circuit.
No, I'm gonna need to read up before I brief us on that one.
Where is rock bottom for Arkansas? I don't think we're there yet, but I think that it's coming.
Yeah, this is the most, like, outmanned they've felt in the SEC since Brett Bielema has been there.
I agree.
Don't you think?
Oh, totally. Because they had Jim Chaney and Sam Pittman in there at the beginning. They were pounding the rock, had it going.
And they've got, I mean, that's going to be Ole Miss game next week. I think they should win that with Shea Patterson out. They're not going to beat LSU or Mississippi State, I don't think. And then they could beat Missouri. So this is looking like a 5-win season. And that's not total. I think Brett Bielema can be granted a 5-win season. Like, that's not totally inexcusable. Like, I don't think Tennessee can allow that. I think Arkansas can stomach one as long as you have a big bounce back year the following year. And I think this is the year. I think this season is going to be rock bottom for Brett Bielema. And I think it's going to keep getting worse.
All right. I think that back-to-back home losses to Mississippi State and Missouri, that'll about do it.
That's the thing. Like, everyone's writing off Missouri, and now
– Nah, don't like, do that.
Yeah, Missouri's going to pick somebody off. Like, they're off. They've got the offensive firepower to sting somebody, and you know Missouri's going to end up sniffing around, maybe going to a bowl. So I think Arkansas is it's unfortunate right now. It's ugly. It's nasty, but it's going to keep getting worse.
So right now, you think that Arkansas finishes 5-7. Bielema comes back for 2018.
Yeah, and I think 2018. I'm not convinced they're going to be a whole lot better in 2018, and that's when I think Brett Bielema is really going to be on the sort of get graded out. That's his final exam.
Bobby Petrino for Arkansas head coach.
Bring it back. Bobby Petrino's name has all of a sudden like lost a little luster, hasn't it?
A little bit, for sure.
Feels like right about now is when we would be usually talking about Bobby Petrino. Is like, is he leaving? Is he going to turn his back on Louisville again? But I just think there's a lot of other coaches out there that seem to be more enticing.
Like Mike right Norvell.
Now. Like Mike Norvell. Like Brent Venables.
Mm.
Like Joe Moorhead.
Mm-hmm. Joe Moorhead, for sure.
Scott Frost. There's going to be... I'm starting to really like some of the candidates for this coaching cycle.
Joe Moorhead has an opportunity if he does want to take a Power 5 head coach, get back to being the head coach. I'd say after this season's probably that's your peak market value.
To me, Joe Moorhead is one of the absolute best candidates out there as a guy that's turning offense around and is playing in some of the biggest games in college football and has proven success. So you get sort of like the sex appeal of a coordinator, but you get the proven success of a head coach because he's done it at Fordham.
Right.
He's run a program really successfully. So I think
and
Joe
wasn't
Moorhead
there like a turnaround at like he not only ran the program successfully, but he was like a big part of the, you know, like big time CEO organizational decisions that you need to be able to make as a head coach. He's done them.
Yeah, I think he took over a program that was winning one or two games a year, and they took him to the FCS national championships. And he took over an offense that was dead in the water at Penn State, and he's made it one of the most explosive offenses in college football. So there's a lot to like about Joe Moorhead, and if I'm an AD with an opening. Man, he's probably first phone call.
Let's see, cleaning out the notebook. Do you have any other peaks or rock bottoms?
Kind of got to go rock bottom on Kansas, don't we? Just a little maybe touch on it. How bad is Kansas?
I mean, but we've seen this before.
Do you remember our over-under Big 12 or pod when I was like excitedly on the over 2.5 or whatever their win total was.
Yes,
man. That was not faux excitement. Like I thought this team had a chance to be decent. I thought this team, you know, the way they've recruited, David Beatty has a great reputation. They got Doug Meacham from TCU. They've got a young defensive backfield that I thought was talented. I haven't watched them because it's not worth it, but. What in the world is going on? They had 21 yards of total offense. That's you could pull up Allen High School from down the road and get them over there to Fort Worth, and they're going to put up more than 21 yards of offense.
No, no, no way. No, I'm not taking the bait on will Alabama beat the Browns, and I'm not taking the bait on will Allen High School put up a better fight against TCU than Kansas.
I don't know, but it sure seems plausible. 21 yards? 21 yards?
But it's TCU.
I don't know, man. Forget the high school argument. I'm just saying, 21 yards, you are a Power 5 major conference program, and you can't muster more than 21 yards, that I don't care who you're playing. That is rock bottom. This is as low as it gets for Kansas.
Kansas, the rest of the way, will be facing. They still got home against Oklahoma. They finished the season Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. Texas before that. Rock bottom's coming.
They're at rock bottom, and they're just going to continue to troll the rock bottom for five more games.
Okay. Speaking of the Big 12, speaking of that, like, where are you at with Texas? Do you think that?
That's a good question.
Like, this is, and I don't know where this is between peak and rock bottom, but I think the Longhorns are probably one of the most fascinating teams, maybe in a closer to Florida State kind of conversation. Obviously different with Tom Herman being in his first year, Jimbo Fisher being established, but like, this is a 3-4 team where you're going to start trying to run the math, and every single game might end up determining whether or not this team makes it to a bowl game.
So I said before this week, I said that they would win one of the three, Oklahoma State, TCU, West Virginia. And I said that they would win Baylor, Kansas, Texas Tech. So I'm going to stick by that. I'm not, just because they like lost one of the games I thought that they should lose by only 3 points in overtime, I'm gonna stick by that. This is a 7-5 team that is a 7-5 that you lead the season feeling good about.
Mm-hmm.
I still like Texas. I mean, they just held Oklahoma State to 10 points in regulation.
They did. Like, Oklahoma owes Texas a thank you for just throwing out a great game plan. Be like, oh yeah, just make Oklahoma State run the ball. They're not real good at that right now.
Yeah, TCU. I mean, they threw out that game plan.
Oh yeah, TCU did it too. That's right.
Yeah, So this is still now. You know, is Ellinger have a concussion now? Maybe is he going to be playing this week? You know, maybe that changes things. I still think they're okay with Shane Buechele. It was interesting though, like on the Texas message boards, they are calling for the OC's head. Tim Beck is not is not going well appreciated right now among Texas fans. That feels lazy to me. A lot of times it feels a little lazy to just like blame the play caller.
Mm-hmm.
This is Tom Herman's offense. This is they were supposed to lose that game. Ended up being a grinded out game that they lost by 3 points. They got a true freshman quarterback. I'm not on that train. I still think this is a team that's just, it's a victim of being in a Big 12 with no gimme games.
Yeah. And look, their conference losses have only come to Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. That is on par with Texas. Right now, in 2017, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are the class of the Big 12. I think.
Yeah, and the darlings of college football right now, Iowa State, they got a win over on the road at home on Thursday night.
When did Texas Tech become a juggernaut? Can't wait for Texas to prove you right with a blowout win against the Red Raiders.
Hey, I'm sure Texas Tech's got a big win in them somewhere. But they hadn't had it yet.
The sarcasm that's dripping off your voice with the darlings of college football, Iowa State. That's good stuff. Let's see. Anything else from the notebook you want to clean out before we get out of here?
Real quick, Arizona State, impressed with what they're doing right now. You know, that's a team that, I mean, it felt like this was Ty Grant's last year. And now they've come out and they really, I mean, that game wasn't really ever close.
No.
Against Utah.
It just took a while for them to get for Arizona State's running game to get going. And once it did, it was done.
Yeah. I mean, Billy Napier settled in as the coordinator. They got USC next.
Yeah. At home.
In Tempe. At night. It's going to be.
That's a really fun Pac-12 after dark game.
That's a tricky game for USC now. So this is not peak for Arizona State. I think that they've – Because here's what they – when you watch Arizona State, one thing you notice, they have talent. They got players. And if they've gotten something figured out to where they can coach them up, you know, I think that USC, they may lose that one, but I they seem to be the best team on their schedule remaining. Like, I would pick them over UCLA. I would pick them over Colorado, Oregon State, obviously. And Arizona, who the hell knows, with the great Khalil Tate under center, but that's going to be a fun game. I like Arizona State.
Rock bottom for USC would be losing this game because then you give up the division.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Clay Helton starts to get – his seat gets hot.
No, we can't do that to Clay Helton.
No, not to say it should be, but it's gonna be like, once again, just like last year, people are going to start, like, you know, yelling and screaming about how Clay Helton is over – you know, isn't a good coach. And I don't think that's true. Like, I actually think Clay Helton is a good coach. I think he's – his team loves him. His coaching staff loves him. I think he's going to be fine, but he's going to – if they lose Arizona State, you better believe he's going to endure some message board hell for a little bit.
I wanted to, before we get out of here, UCF, big time, 31-21 win on the road. It wasn't always easy, and they did get benefit from an injury to Navy quarterback Zach Abey, but this was one of the last biggest, toughest opponents – for UCF, and they showed up and they got it going.
UCF, when they face USF in the AAC championship game, are going to blow the doors off those guys.
Oh yeah, 100%.
There's a fraud, and then there's the real deal, and UCF's the real deal.
That's the battle for I-4, because they're in the same division. That'll be the last regular season game.
Yep. Yep.
I'm all in on the Knights. Knights to the Fiesta Bowl. That's the way this goes. Blake Bortles.
UCF this weekend is playing Austin Peay, a team that's won one game in the previous 49 prior to this year, and they're now sitting at like 5-3 or something, with one of the best young coaches in FCS, Will Healy. I'm actually going to go by there this week and just to write something up on them. That's going to be, you know, I'm sure UCF's going to win and win easily. But just kind of an interesting subplot there is, like, quietly one of the best coaches, young coaches out there, maybe on the other sideline across from Scott Frost. So that's something to keep an eye on this weekend.
Okay. So keep an eye on that. Barton's got that coming. I'm going to say UCF still wins by 63.
Yeah, I wouldn't go putting any money on the money line.
Yeah, no upset alert there. But yeah, should be a lot of fun. All right, we still got Gary Danielson coming. We still got Danny Cannell coming. Of course, we should have Tom Fornelli back for our picks at the end of the week. And much, much more. The way that you make sure that you get it and don't miss a thing is by subscribing to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast. Barton, thank you very much.
Sure.